Hi, Bill and Joe from NIAAA are here.
Hello, this is Jennifer.
Hi, Jennifer.
Ed's going to be off the call today, so I'll be moderating.
Oh, okay.
Hannigan's on.
Hi, John.
Hello.
We're just having people trickle on now, so.
Okay.
Oh, really?
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. Hi, everyone. Jen's going to start the roll call here in just a second. It's Jill. Ed's not on the call today.
Hello. Jill just told me that there aren't beeps, so I'm not sure when people are coming in. So I'll go ahead and just go through a roll call real quick. Did I just hear Christy? No? Claire, Cole? Joanne? Jeff, well, maybe we need to give everyone another minute or two. Phil says, it's not beeping when people come in, so you don't know. I'm like, okay.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah. So I have Rajesh, I have John, I have Bill and Joe. Who else is on the call?
Ken Jones.
Johan's here.
Okay. Ken. Sarah.
This is
Johan.
Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
Hey. This is Leah, and Tatiana will be here in about half an hour. Hey,
oh, she's... Is she going to be there? I'm sorry, Leah, is she coming in the last half of the call?
Yes, she just came. She just popped in and said, I'm so sorry, blah, 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 blah. She'll be here the last half.
Got it. Okay.
And this is Christy Petrenko.
Hi, Christy.
Hi, it's Joanne Weinberg here.
Hi, Joanne.
Hi, Christina Taparello here.
Hello.
Hello.
Do we have... Do we have Claire Coles?
We do.
Hello, Claire. Allison? Mike Suddy? Tom Blanchard? Sandra Mooney? Katze?
I'm here.
Okay, hi, Sandra.
Hi.
Do we have the Tories?
Yes.
Hello.
Yes.
Tom or Kathy? From NOFAS. Sarah Jo?
I'm here.
Hello.
Hey,
James Reynolds? And Dan Savage? Okay, well, I will go ahead and get started. Ed isn't here today, so I'll be moderating. And the first thing we were going to do was start out with a central repository update, but we'll hold off and put that to the last half if Tatiana's going to be late. So I think we can go ahead. Actually, if you look at the screen, you can see an update on our concept proposals, manuscript submissions, and post-acceptance forms that Jill has put up on the WebEx. And I want to encourage everybody, again, with the post-acceptance forms to fill out the details so that we can make sure that we have press releases available to NIAAA. Otherwise, I think we'll go ahead and start with, we have a few updates of projects that we didn't get to last call. So we'll start with the Tori's presentation.
All right. So
I think we're getting this.
Yeah, so okay, all right. So our goal is to identify the peripheral RNA biomarkers for predicting the neural behavior problems in FASD. So in M1, we use a mouse preclinical model that we have been using for a long time. And in M2, we so far obtained 11 patient blood from FASD cohort that Tina had. And we successfully sorted and stored the T cell, B cell monocytes and the plasma. So we are waiting the control patient blood to go forward for the RNA sequencing. So next slide, please. So today I just briefly have some updates for the AIM-1 preclinical mouse model. So we actually performed the same procedure for FASD, our FASD model, and also another preclinical model that we have, the offspring of the gestational of the diabetic mom. So the gestational diabetic offsprings are known to have a similar neurobehavior problem in the human cohort. And also similarly, we also have the, we also found the similar neurobehavior problems in our FASD model and also the gestational diabetes model. So the lower panel shows one of the example of our behavior test, the accelerated rotor rot. So the mouse are pressed to the accelerated rotor rot and have the 6 trials within the 2 consecutive days. And we quantified, as you can see in the B, the terminal speed of the each trial. So the compared with the trial 1, in the last trial, so the trial 6, we see the increase of the terminal speed, meaning that the mouse can stay longer on the rotor rod, even in the high speed. So the mouse can learn the how to coordinate the their body on this rotor rod after multiple trials. So by quantifying this difference of the terminal speed, we can have the learning index of each of the animals. And you can see in the figure C, the animals show the lower learning index. Similarly, we also see the lower learning index in the gestational diabetes model. So can go to the next slide, please. So after these trial behavior tests, we also collected the blood from these the animals and performed the RNA sequencing after the separation of the T cell B cell monocytes. And the lower panel shows the FOX sorting procedure using the antibodies specific to the T cell B cell monocytes. Next slide, please. So here is the RNA-seq profile results. So the first in the left panel shows the TSNE to examine whether the overall RNA profiles of each of the RNA samples are different or similar. And this shows that the, each of the cell types have a different profile in general. And this validates our RNA profile. So the light panel shows the table of the gene ontology of the B cell using the differential expression genes, which is done in the comparison of the PBS versus the ethanol. And we found the geontology, which is relevant to the FSD pathology that is known, such as the immune response and the cardio system related genes. Next slide, please. So on top of such conventional differential exposure analysis between the PBS exposed, ethanol exposed, or like the gestational diabetes model versus control, we also performed the differential splicing event analysis of the messenger RNA as a potential biomarker in the prediction of the neural behavior problem. So here shows the number of the differential splicing events that we defined using the algorithm called LeafCutter. And you see the T cell, B cell have like around 200 differential splicing events, which are specific to the ethanol exposure. But in monocyte, we only had 50 events. So can you push one more? Can you go to the next slide? Sorry. So so we see the similarity actually in the T cell and the B cell splicing events. And this is one of the example of such events. The RBM39 is the gene actually we defined in our brain profiling. And similar to such brain profile, we also found the differences in the splicing of this gene in our T cell and B cell profiling, as we show in here with the blue lines. But we do not see the monocytes in the monocytes. So hopefully by continuing to compare such brain versus blood samples and also the comparison between the alcohol exposure model and the gestational diabetes models, or like a comparison between T cell monocyte to B cell, we want to rank the potential biomarkers and have the huge biomarker genes as the predictor of the neural behavior problems. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any questions?
So I did have a question.
John?
Dr. Torrey, when I was looking at the behavioral data on the rotor rod learning index, and there's quite a range among the animals. And I was wondering if any of the gut bio measures help to differentiate the learners from the non-learners.
That's a good point. Actually, we use the CD1 outbred model here because we want to have actually the separation of the behavior, the magnitude of the learning level, so that, you know, we may have more like a better picture of the biomarkers which relevant to, you know, to explaining the, you know, the magnitude of the learning level. So we intentionally use this, you know, the CD1 model to, you know, expand this, you know, the learning variability. But we also, yes, you are right. So basically we also have some physiological measures which may explain the differences within the same cohort, within the, like, a alcohol exposed model. We see, you know, the probably the level of the learning index may correlate with such as like the brain weight and also the body weight. So we have such like a data set. So we want to see if these are also, you know, correlated with such, you know, the variability in the learning index. Yes. Not only the RNA sequencing, RNA sequencing data.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Kazway, I had one quick question. Could you just remind us what the model is? It's an injection of alcohol?
Yes. Yeah.
When and what dose? I missed it in the...
Yeah. So we have been using the model of the IT injection around the peak of the corticogenesis around the mouse embryonic 14 to 16 days at the level of the 4 gram per kilogram weight. So, yeah.
So 14 to 16 days of gestation.
Yes.
And what was the dose? I'm sorry.
4 gram per kilogram weight.
And all injected all at once.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Katsue? So our next presentation is Sandra Mooney.
Okay. Can we go to the second slide, please, Jill? All right. So as a reminder, this is a rat study, and we had two hypotheses. In the first experiment, we looked at the microbiome in the dams and how that changed with alcohol and whether it was passed to the offspring. And in the second one, we looked at markers of immune regulation. So next slide, please. Experiment one, here's the layout. We took fecal samples from adult females prior to pregnancy. They were in the facility. They were given a defined chow diet and alcohol in the drinking water using the Dan Savage / Derek Hamilton model, or they were given alcohol in a liquid diet. And this is the unbalanced design, that there were no pregnancies in the control liquid diet group. Fecal samples were taken again from the dams around the time of birth, and then from the pups at day 21 or day 50. They sampled one male and one female from each litter, and it was the same animal at 21 and 50. So if we go to the next slide, I'm very pleased to be able to tell you that we have some data back on our microbiome. So this is just showing an example of some of the taxa and how they were represented in the dam pre- and post-alcohol exposure, and then in each of the pups at the two different ages. So we have pretty colors. We go to the next slide, please. What happens when you send big data, complicated experimental design out, is that they often just compare one group to another, which is what they did. So they collapsed all of the control water groups, so the dams, pre, post, and all the four pup samples into a single data set and compared those. So Tom has gone back to them and asked them to break the groups out a little bit to specifically ask these questions you see here, which is how did alcohol change the microbiome in the dams? How does the dam microbiome compare to the pup at two different ages? How does ethanol play into that? And then how stable is the pup microbiome from 21 to day 50? I have these data, and I was playing around a little bit with some hierarchical clustering. And what I can tell you is that in the water group, that the microbiome of the dam at delivery is actually really quite similar to what we see in the pups at postnatal day 21, less similar to what we see in the pups at postnatal day 50, so it looks like that changes, and then we're going to look for consistent alcohol evidence there. So that is, analysis is ongoing. If we go to the next slide. So this is the second experiment to look at the immune responses. So these were litter mates. The animals were collected postnatal day 50. The spleens were taken and cultured, and then they went through this cytokine analysis. So next slide, please. We have some data back from that too. And this is a little confusing. I do not have these data, so I can only show you what Tom has sent. In the bold, what he's highlighted here are things that he would have predicted would change with the alcohol exposure, and you can see that for the most part they did not, so that was based on the literature. In the yellow highlights, you see differences between animals that came from the liquid ethanol diet group versus the water control, which is not a great comparison, but there are six in the bright yellow that changed significantly, and then there are two in the dimmer yellow that had trends towards the difference between those. You'll also see the asterisks there. So what you see with the veg F, bottom right, is it was actually significantly different in the alcohol in water group versus the water control group. And then IL-18 and eotaxin showed trends towards differences between those two groups. I do not know the direction of the change, but I will tell you that Tom's interpretation is that the cytokines that look different are from the innate immune cell factors that he thinks is indicative of an inflammatory response, and he's hoping to be able to go ahead and take the colonic tissue and do RT-PCR or some specific markers of interest in there. So we have some data, and hopefully as we pursue the analysis, we'll be sending in concepts for papers. Thanks. Questions?
Hi, it's Michael Charnas. So you've shown some change in gut microbiome, and you've shown some changes in the inflammatory response. How do you plan to go about looking to see if those two are related?
That is a good question. We would need to talk to a bioinformatician on the best way to reconcile two quite large data sets. You can see in the cytokine list, you know, the number of outcomes that we got there. The microbiome, depending on which level you look at, there's a lot of data. So it's always difficult to figure out how to do any sort of regression to see what's what. So I don't have a good answer, but you guys have bioinformaticians, so that would be a good question there.
So rather than depending on the bioinformatics, which is subject to multiple comparisons and potentially small effects, what about an attempt to manipulate the microbiome to see if there's any influence on the pro-inflammatory cytokine response? Specifically, you know, have you considered using antibiotics at a certain stage, or to do a fecal transplantation from the non-exposed to the exposed and vice versa to see if you can change the response? That would be probably a more satisfying experiment than statistical correlation.
So, yes, initially we had wanted to do the fecal microbiota transplant. And I think that would definitely be a way forward. We do need to be completely convinced that there's a reasonably strong or at least persistent alcohol effect in the microbiome before doing that. So I think we would want those comparisons back before we decided to pursue those experiments. But yeah, good.
Thank you.
Other questions for Sandra?
Hey, Sandra, this is Bill. I'm glad to see that you have some microbiome data from Tom. I had a question. The first AIM, were there any plans to collect other outcome measures from the animals? You know, I assume you've got weight and growth parameters, but were there any thoughts of doing behavioral testing on these animals, or I guess, you know, maybe there's just not enough numbers to do that?
So there are not enough numbers in this because it's three litters in one and four in another to do behavior testing. Yes, they have weights. I do not have all that data, but I do have brains. And I believe they still have the colonic tissue, so there's a chance to do that sort of thing. Moving forward, yes, I would want to look at behavior to ask the question of how that plays out. But unfortunately, because I was moving around the time they were doing this, they did not set up to do the behavior with the litter mate, which had been a thought at one time.
Any other questions? Thank you, Sandra. Then I think we'll move on to Rajesh, who's going to talk about the Ukraine project.
Okay, can you hear us?
Yes.
So we're standing in for Tina since she's in Ukraine, and so we'll try and pretend to be Tina. I have here with me Amanda Mankey, Nihal Selim, and Marissa Pinson. Amanda's going to do the first part where we're going to, she's going to talk about the updates for the child samples. That is yet a preliminary area. And then Nihal will talk about her analysis with an extended sample from the pregnant moms. And that is, you may have heard part of it before, but this is the final data set. And this is ready for a paper, I think. And so without further ado, Amanda, would you start?
Yeah, thanks, Rajesh. All right, go ahead and go to the next slide. So this is the work to look at the circulating microRNA from plasma samples from the Ukraine children samples. Right now we have 57 total samples. About half of those overlap with samples that have gone to Joanne Weinberg's lab for cytokine chemokine analysis, and we have a 29 additional samples. These children are about 2 to 3.5 years old. We did have a slight issue during our qPCR analysis that we corrected for. These plasma samples were collected in heparin-coated tubes, and we actually were able to look through the literature and find that heparinase treatment during cDNA seemed to help recover that because heparin is a reverse transcriptase inhibitor. So these are heparinase treated during cDNA synthesis, and they were subjected to our normal microRNA nome panel, which looks for 752 unique microRNAs. In this preliminary analysis, 164 microRNAs were shown in greater than 80% of the samples. And so I'm going to show you a little bit of data today on ethanol exposed versus ethanol unexposed, but just like Joanne shown in some of her analyses before, we also have a division between neurodevelopmentally normal or neurodevelopmentally low or low neurodevelopment groups. And so I'm also going to show you a little bit of comparison using the neurodevelopmental status. And then there is one child who the neurodevelopmental status is unknown, but was included for the ethanol exposed versus unexposed analysis. Next slide. So here, looking by ethanol status, so on the x-axis is delta-delta CT, or relative fold expression, and to the left are microRNAs that were increased in the unexposed children. MicroRNAs to the right are increasing the exposed children. And on the y-axis is Cohen's D, so a measure of effect size. And you can see that shown in green, even though this is a preliminary analysis, there are a number of microRNAs that already show a moderate effect size, so a Cohen's D greater than 0.5. And there's even one microRNA that's showing a large effect size of Cohen's D greater than 0.8. None of these microRNAs are significant yet, so they all still have 95% confidence intervals that span zero, but we are seeing that likely once we get more of the samples, we'll have some excellent microRNA candidates to differentiate ethanol exposed versus unexposed children. Next slide. When we look by neurodevelopmental status, we actually see a lot more microRNAs that show a large effect size. So once again, microRNA expression is on the x-axis, y-axis is effect size. Towards the left are those microRNAs that were increased in the normally neurodevelopmental children, and towards the right are neurodevelopmentally low in the neurodevelopmental parameters. You can see, once again, we have a good selection that are changed by moderate effect size, but a really big number that are changed by large effect size. So we're excited about this data and that we might have some really strong predictors of neurodevelopmental delay. Next slide. So previously in the Ukraine maternal cohort, we had used, in the circulating microRNAs, we used random forest analysis to see which microRNAs were the best predictors of infant outcomes. And what we find interesting is in these children samples, out of those 11 microRNAs that were identified in the maternal samples to be predictive of child outcome, 11 out of those 19 random forest analysis microRNAs were present in this preliminary analysis of the children's samples, and you can see those in any shade of blue, and that a number of these were actually changed in the ethanol status at a, by ethanol status at a moderate effect size. So these random forest analysis microRNAs that were identified in maternal samples may well be a little bit, may well be preserved and be predictive or indicative of ethanol exposure status in the children. Next slide. And those same maternal random forest analysis microRNAs, we actually see that a number of them, based on neurodevelopmental status, have a moderate to large effect size. So once again, 11 out of those 19 maternal random forest analysis microRNAs were present in the children's sample, and now 9, so almost all of them, have a moderate or a large effect size when you're looking at differences in neurodevelopmental status, really indicating that those random forest analysis identified maternal microRNAs may continue to be predictive of prenatal alcohol exposure outcomes in the children.
Is that the last
yes,
slide?
Yes, that's it for me.
Yeah, I have a question.
Stop for questions here.
Yes.
Is that the microRNAs that are changing with the neurodevelopmental status, is that regardless of alcohol exposure?
Yes, right now they're binned. Since it was a small N, we didn't want to go all the way down into breaking it into four groups, but we're hoping when we get a bigger N, we'll have some power to do that.
Okay. Thanks. Questions?
This is Jeff. Real quick question. In terms of the neurodevelopmental status, is this a some kind of a conglomerate measure of a number of instruments, or is this IQ, or what is the cognitive component?
A lot of it is physical components, so like FAS face presentation. I do think they have a cognitive component.
Maybe the Bayley scale or something.
Yeah, I think it's the Bayley. I think they do have a cognitive component. I don't know right off the top of my head.
It is for these child samples. It is, Amanda. It's Bayley's at 6 and 12 months.
Got
thanks,
it.
Joanne.
Claire,
thank you.
For the preschool sample, it is not Bayley's.
No. This is a for these 2 to 3.5 year olds. That's what they were showing.
The 2-year-olds is going to be Bailey's.
That's what they were showing.
Kids is something else.
Right. No, that's all they. That's the age they were showing, Claire.
Right. Okay.
So before this gets to the publication stage, obviously that's something that we have to make sure we all are on the same page.
Yes. Well, just check that we can talk about it.
Yeah.
There are also measures that Julie did. That are cognitive in nature.
Okay. So the next update is the analysis of our expanded maternal samples, and here Nihal is going to take over.
Thank you, Dr. Miranda. As Dr. Miranda mentioned, I'm presenting an updated analysis in which we included 25 more samples. Next slide, please. The 25 additional samples were all in the third trimester, but for the whole data set, we have a second and third trimester and 3 exposure groups, either unexposed, which is UE, heavily exposed, but the infant was apparently unaffected, which is HEUA, and the third group is the heavily exposed and the infant was affected, and this is HEA. And as Amanda mentioned, we profiled the microRNA using qPCR array. And in this data set, we have 153 microRNA, which were expressed in more than 80% of the samples. Next slide. And I'm showing breakdown of the sample size by males and females. Next slide, please.
And just to interrupt, that's by the sex of the infant.
By the sex of the infant. Mm-hmm. Those are maternal samples. I approached this analysis by asking the question if alcohol exposure affects the co-regulation of microRNA, and if the sex of the infant affects the microRNA profile in the moms, in the maternal samples. So to approach the question of the co-regulation, I'm showing here a correlation plot. In this correlation plot, the microRNAs are ordered and colored by chromosomal location, and you are seeing the significant correlations between the microRNAs. Here you can realize, if you look at the right-hand side, that the microRNA correlations increased in the alcohol-exposed group. And I'm showing an example in the maternal samples resulting in female infants. And this increase appears to be specific between certain pairs of chromosomes. Next slide, please. To quantify the interchromosomal correlations and to see if we have specific pairs of chromosomes that show increased correlations by alcohol exposure, I construct this radar plot. Next, please. And here I'm highlighting a pair of chromosomes, two pair of chromosomes, which shows the increased correlation by alcohol exposure. This kind of analysis helps us identify chromosomal 3D factors that can be impacted by prenatal alcohol exposure. Next, please. Here I'm showing the analysis by segregating by infant sex results in decreased sample size and decreased power. I'm showing the methods that I used to overcome this problem, which is the bootstrap. I don't think I will have the time to explain all of it. If we can go over all of the slides, please. And I would be happy to discuss it offline if anyone is interested. But here I wanted to highlight that the resulting histogram, this is the output I'm looking at. Next slide, please. So here I'm showing the resulting histograms of applying the bootstrap on all of our groups at the different time points, comparing males and females. And also I'm showing the p-values resulting from such analysis. And here, some groups are significantly impacted by prenatal alcohol exposure. So you can see the female HEA group in the second trimester, while the males in the second trimester were not affected. And in the third trimester, it's a heavily exposed affected in the males and the females were affected. So it's the infant sex and also the infant outcome did affect the pattern of correlation between microRNAs. Next slide, please. So in addition to the correlation analysis, I studied the effect size of prenatal alcohol exposure on each microRNA with all the samples combined and also by segregating the samples by infant sex. Here also I applied bootstrap to compensate for the decreased sample size. And in this figure, you are seeing the first panel, the black panel. The microRNAs are the horizontal lines. They are ranked in order of increased effect size. And the length of the horizontal line indicates the effect size. And in the red and blue panels, you can see the effect size of each microRNA when the sample was segregated by infant sex. Next, please. So here I'm showing an example of one microRNA, which shown to be close to the cutoff of a high effect size, which was here negative 0.8. And when we segregated by infant sex, we found that this high effect size was contributed mainly by the male infants, not the female infants. Next, please. Here I'm showing other example. If you focus on this blue box, the effect size was zero when the samples were combined by infant sex. But when we segregated by infant sex, now we can find high effect size in two, moderate effect size in two directions, increased versus decreased. Next, please. So those arrows are showing two microRNAs where the effect size were moderate negative in the female, while in the male they were moderate positive. And of course, when we combine those, this results in an effect size combined equal to zero. And this highlights the importance of segregating by infant sex, even when we are looking at the maternal samples. And for the sake of time, I will stop here, but there are a lot of analysis which is going to this paper, and I would be happy to discuss any of this at any time. And thank you.
Thanks, Neha. Yeah.
Thank you.
Any questions for Nihal?
How much is known about sex differences in these microRNAs in typical pregnancies?
Boy, that's a really good question, and the brief answer is really nothing. I think we're the first group to really be looking at the effect of infant sex on maternal microRNA responses. but it's just something that that we've become sensitized to. We attended the OSSD meeting, Organization for the Study of Sex Differences, and there's clearly a huge interest starting to emerge in really early emerging sex differences. So I think this is a very kind of a hot area for growth.
Any other questions?
I think that basically where we're going with this is that for a diagnosis, it'll have to be personalized to the particular type of pregnancy. I think the take-home message, whether the pregnancy is with a male child or a female child, it increases the complexity of diagnosis, I think.
Thank you. Do we have Tatiana on the phone?
Yeah, Lee and I are both here.
Okay,
yeah, Lee and I
great.
Are both here.
Okay, we'll Lee move them to the central repository.
Okay. Leah, we're ready to hear your voice.
Okay. So I broke up the progress by the clinical projects and the animal model projects, the basic science. So there are some groups that have all of their data to date, I suppose, uploaded, it's been reviewed by us, the data dictionary matches the data file. So that means basically that the data that they have uploaded and the data dictionary can be shared by other people within CFAS.
And I want Joanne and I to get a gold star. That's
yes.
What I really want out of this. Go ahead.
Yes, you see,
exactly.
Exactly.
Successfully to Leah.
You should put that in the table.
Please do. Gold star.
There you go.
That's what should
have. Duly noted.
It's for the brevity. It's just like gold star. So there are some people who are still revising the file so that the data dictionary matches the actual data files. Some people don't have any data uploaded, and I need to keep pushing those people. Some people, we've given them feedback, and we're waiting for them to also reconcile the data dictionary with the data files.
And just to remind everyone, we're getting ourselves to be able to do this. I think we said we would do it quarterly. We have to do this. It's part of our data sharing. We're trying to make it as easy as we can. And again, once we fix the format and make sure everything matches, then we certainly hope this is going to be really, you know, stay in a routine, and we can just march through this. But we have to do it. Go ahead.
Okay.
Anyone have questions on it?
So basic science groups, Dr. Mooney, Dr. Blanchard actually uploaded real data, and I've worked with Tom working out his data file and his data dictionary, but he has actual data, and we're reconciling now the data dictionary with their data. The other data dictionary for the other groups are data dictionaries that I made up for them. So we are likely to have problems when they actually upload data.
So then they're going to do some work.
Yeah.
And this is just, I think that's something new. So I think in the past versions of CFAS, I think there wasn't really as much of a systematic approach to how we're going to handle the basic science project. And part of the goal here is, if I could just say, like everybody's kind of treated the same, everyone's got to get some sharing put in place, and so it's just sort of something uniform across all of the projects, which I think is also kind of a good thing as well. But it is almost the end of the second year, and so we really do have to get this done. And so I think we're pretty kind of working our way through here, but I think now as we get through the summer, it really needs to get done. And so if someone's confused about what their status is on here, or, you know, I think we are trying to communicate pretty regularly, but if you're unclear, you know, what it is you need or something like that, we're glad to set up a call with you, glad to talk to you, whatever we can do to clarify. I mean, we don't mean to make it complicated. We're just trying to make sure that the data dictionary you send matches the data you turn in. And that's really all it is. So, and then we just put in place so that we can do this every quarter. Anyone have any questions? I jumped in. Yeah, I said I wasn't going to do that, but I ended up doing it. Sorry. Okay, that's it.
Well, thank you for all your hard work. And again, we really do need to have all of these data uploaded. So, work with Tatiana and Leah. Thank you, guys. Jill has a few updates.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi. Sorry, I just wanted to say I apologize. I had to go get the door, so if I missed something during Leah's moving the slides forward, that's on me. I just want to remind everyone that the dates for the next face-to-face meeting have been set. Those are going to be Monday, October 28th, all day, and Tuesday, October 29th. And Dr. Dunty provided this view of the room that we're going to be using. As you can see, there's room for several of you near the table and several of you off the table. So just a heads up in your planning. I'm going to be sending out a doodle poll. I estimate there'll be about 20 of you that need sleeping spaces, so that does not put us in the hotbed of them giving us high discounts. So I'll try and choose a room, but if some of you are privy to staying at Marriott's or Hilton's or anything like that, we don't have to go with the block room, but I'll make sure that I have one available. So does that work for everyone?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to say is that I got an email. Dr. Tarnas, are you still on?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Do you want to share the good news that you got this morning? Or yesterday, maybe?
Oh, yeah. So the ESPRA symposium was accepted, and we'll be presenting that sometime between the 21st and 24th of September. We're waiting just to hear what day it will be.
Based on the email chain, it looks like you did a lot of gymnastics to get that submitted, so thank you for being so persistent with the system and getting that recognition for CFAST at that meeting.
Thank you.
In case anyone's wondering, the next meeting for this group, the fourth Wednesday, actually falls within RSA, and all of you will be in Minneapolis, so we will be either moving that meeting up a week forward or a week back, or we will be canceling it. I'll also send a doodle poll about what works best for everyone for that. And beyond the CFAST symposium at RSA, there will not be a formal or informal gathering of this group at that meeting, just so that all of you know when you're planning your schedules, you don't need to reserve any meals for this group. The last thing I wanted to mention is with the CFAST online Google documents tracking progress for CFAST 4. Many of you tailored those to your year two goals, and year two will be ending here already next Friday. So I want to encourage you to start looking at what we need to change and work with me to get those changes for your year three goals so that they then represent what's going on for your project for next year and the coming years if you want to go that far forward as well. If you have any questions, you can, of course, contact me, and we can work together to make those indicative of what you need them to show for the upcoming year. Notice of grant awards, I'd imagine, will be coming out in the next couple of weeks as well. NIAAA, any comments about that?
Not really.
Okay.
I don't have anything to update.
Okay.
I get everything on schedule. Yeah, I think Type 5 is all approved, and it should be released or ready to be reviewed.
Once you get those, if you can just shoot me a copy of your PDF, that would be great. And at the same time, when we collect those, I also like to just collect your protocols are in place for your IACUC and your IRB approvals. I don't need your actual consents, just your approvals. So that's the comments that I have. Does anyone have anything, any other exciting findings in their research they want to share for this month?
It's Michael. I'll just mention, and I'm sorry I came on late, but Jeff Wozniak had a paper, a really nice review article accepted by Lancet Neurology on fetal alcohol spectrum disorders. And that's going to be out May 31st.
Excellent.
Great. With two excellent co-authors, Michael Charnas and Ed Riley.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Michael.
Congrats.
Any other news or findings or other agenda items people want to bring up? Any comments from the Science Advisory Board or NIAAA? We have about 10 minutes if anyone wants to, has any additional comments.
This is Hannigan. I just wanted to, as the member of your advisory board, is to encourage completion of the data uploading and working with the data dictionary, it's clear from the presentation on that today that Tatiana and Leah and their team are very much interested in helping to get things worked out. So, and maybe it's a sense that you have to have everything perfect before you start to upload things. And I get the sense that they're very happy to work with you on both the dictionary and the uploading. So I encourage that to keep ahead of that if you can. And the other thing I wanted, just a point of news, is that last week the Michigan FASD group called McFairs in Michigan had a statewide conference that featured a couple of CFAS-affiliated speakers. Tina was there and Julie was there. And also Christy Petrenko's work on Families Moving Forward was really featured by Heather Carmichael Olson. Christy's working with the Michigan group. It's really quite an energized group. There were over 330 people there, including people who are affected, their families, counselors, teachers, and the like. So quite an active group in Michigan, and CFAS was well represented there.
If there's anything from that we should add to the front page of the CFAS News website, we're happy to do so. So send anything to Jennifer.
I'll let you know.
Okay. Thanks, John. Any other items? Michael?
No, thanks, Paul.
Okay. All right, well, thank you, everyone. I guess we'll be seeing each other at RSA.
Okay, thanks, Jeff.
Right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
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 See ya.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Especially when that's in rain now, that's when you grew up, that's what you do. There might be like in the teens, but they're actually like 20.